Have you noticed the growing divide between those who are thriving with artificial intelligence and those who are being left behind? Today, my guest dives into what's driving this AI divide and why empowering everyday users is critical for a fair and inclusive future. He goes on to share practical advice and real-world examples to help you support those who are struggling to embrace AI and close the gap. My name is Alexander Nevsky, and this is Innovation Tales.
Navigating change, one story at a time, we share insights from leaders tackling the challenges of today's digital world. Welcome to Innovation Tales, the podcast exploring the human side of digital transformation.
Artificial intelligence, revolutionary tech, or the ultimate headache? If you're a business leader trying to navigate this AI craze, you might feel a bit like you're standing in the cereal aisle with way too many options. Enter Justin Simpson, co-founder of Here Now AI, whose weekly newsletter helps over 20,000 readers make sense of AI without drowning in jargon. His mission? To help people and businesses use AI to work smarter, not harder. In today's episode, Justin tackles the AI divide, a problem where some people are zooming ahead while others are stuck at the starting line, wondering if this thing is worth their time. He'll share practical tips, real-life examples, and a no-nonsense approach to help you lead your team. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Justin Simpson. Justin, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Alex. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm delighted to have you. Your work with the Here Now AI newsletter has focused on making artificial intelligence accessible to everyone, not just the tech savvy. But I would like to start with a bigger picture question. Why do you see closing the AI divide as such a critical issue?
Yeah, I lived through, you know, the first age of technology when a lot of the benefit of that technology accumulated to a small group of people. And once AI came out and one could see its power and the speed at which it's changing, I have great concern that even more and even more quickly, the benefits would accrue to those who understood and could leverage this new technology versus those who are left behind. And I'm passionate that people not be left behind because it's such a liberating and powerful technology that I think it does have the ability to help across a broad spectrum of society, but society needs to embrace it and at least play with it and engage with it in order to get those benefits.
I definitely see where you're coming from. But somebody might argue that the AI divide isn't as urgent because tools are becoming more and more intuitive. How would you respond to that perspective?
Well, in the consumer world, the core is playing space, if you like, is becoming more accessible, and that will continue. But in the workspace, we just had Meta, Mark Zuckerberg, saying he expects his software engineers to be 30% more productive in 2025 because they're leveraging AI tools. And the implication is if you're not 30% more productive, you can expect to be replaced by someone who is. So I think that there are a number of factors that could change dramatically. For example, small businesses, and I engage with those, even here in San Francisco, which is the world capital of AI, if you like, there are small businesses who aren't using AI. And when I explain to them, this is a marketing department, a client communications department, a customer service department, all of which you can set up and use easily and quickly. Now, if you don't, someone is going to. And so Fei-Fei Li, who's a professor of AI, one of them, she called the godmother of AI at Stanford, the Center for Human-Centered Artificial Intelligence, said, your job won't be taken by AI, but your job could be taken by someone who knows how to leverage AI. And I think people who are sitting back and waiting for it to become easy and accessible risk missing out.
I see. So let's move on to the newsletter. Can you share your story, how you came with the idea?
Yeah. So sitting here in San Francisco, of course, you see all the exciting stuff, the cutting edge, what's coming next. And that partly informs this urgency that I have. And so I started this newsletter to say, for non-technical readers, let's find ways to help people understand what AI is, because there's a lot of big conceptual discussion about the long-term future and artificial general intelligence and all sorts of slogans and slang. But for general people, the best way to experience what AI is to do something with it. So every week I put out three or four different applications that are intended to improve your life at work, at home, or at play. So some of them aren't that serious to me. Playing around with creating AI music for most people is fun. But for a few, it's a career and something to be taken seriously and a creative endeavor, etc. But for most people, being able to write a few sentences of description and have it turned into an engaging song is a wow moment to help them understand this is a powerful technology rather than something that's going to transform their lives. So put a random sort of selection of those. So therefore, I look at 30 or 40 AI apps every week to decide what seems to be in the category of useful.
You said 30 or 40, but it can't be random. You probably have some way of selecting the ones that you consider would be the most interesting for your readers.
Yeah, there's an awful lot out there, and some of them are quite obscure, so they would appeal to a very niche audience. Some of them are put out by unclear sort of groups that don't make it and identify themselves. I won't put something on the newsletter if I don't know exactly who's behind the software, and so some folk, perhaps in their rush to get it out, forget to tell you who they are and what their story is. Some will expect you to pay first and then discover if you like the software. And so I don't put those in. Generally, they are something which has a free trial or a lower tier level that people can experiment with. Mm-hmm. And then the sort of general thing of thinking, if I'm a non-technical person, would this be interesting to me that I could say, oh, I could try this with respect to my professional life or with respect to my home life.
And so can you share maybe an example or story from a reader who applied something they learned from your newsletter?
There's two, if I may. One is a fun one. I put out a story about an app which takes a photograph of a family member or yourself and turns it into a Pixar cartoon. And so many people came to me and said, I know I should be focusing on the things that have helped me at work, but that was such fun. I spent way too long doing that. And I think that's a success as well, because it's helping understand the power of AI in its own way. But something that's very useful, I put out a piece about a tool which I use myself all the time. I'm not gifted with high-speed typing. And so I saw an app called Flow, which lives natively on my Mac. I'm in the Mac environment. And anytime I hold down a key, takes my voice and records it. There's a lot of transcription apps, but this AI filter recognizes that I'm human. So I say, or I correct myself. I say, I'll see you on Tuesday, not Wednesday. And what comes out very quickly at up to a couple of hundred words a minute is sort of coherent version of what I've said. And that can be filled in whether I'm writing a script for an AI generation, a letter, an email, etc. And I wrote about that. And a lot of people have told me that they've adopted that as because they also, like me, are not high-speed typists.
That's an amazing example, a very useful one. Can you think of anything more, let's say, controversial or maybe an unexpected reaction you've received from something you shared on the newsletter?
Not so much from a specific app, but I think there is a lot of concern about AI in general and the fact that I take an optimistic view in the newsletter. I'm trying to encourage people to use it, so I'm not inclined to talk about the long-term consequences of AI. And several people have pushed back and said, why don't you engage with the risks of job loss or the threat to different industries, etc. I'm aware of those and consciously thinking about what the implications for society are, but I choose in my newsletter not to engage with that. It's not intended to be a holistic philosophical view of AI. It's intended to be a very hands-on, light, experimental version.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so if there was like a simple exercise or experiment that our listeners could try today to understand the potential of AI or learn about a new tool, what would you recommend to them?
So for starters, I think that ChatGPT is the main adopted encounter with AI that everybody has. And I encourage people to go and play with it because it's not the same ChatGPT that they might have played with 6 months ago. It's a very much more sophisticated animal. So even without leaving that ChatGPT environment now, for example, you can set up projects where you keep a set of information, documents, data related to a specific topic, and you just have a conversation with that particular topic. So it's not the general knowledge that ChatGPT has of the world. It's just a knowledge of your particular set of files and links, etc. You can ask ChatGPT to send you a reminder. For example, every morning I get from ChatGPT a list of the top news stories and technology of the previous day. I get a forecast of my weather for the day. So those are called tasks, and ChatGPT is now engaging. And this is the beginning of what we're going to see a lot of in 2025, which is not just AI as a source of information, but AI as a partner that executes for you on your behalf. In the beginning, what I'm describing are quite simple tasks. It's going to be a matter of weeks or months before regular folk, not just skilled programmers, can ask an AI to go away and research a holiday, including travel and hotels, why have you come back with a plan? Probably at this stage, they don't want to give their credit card information. So it'll come back as a, here's what I've booked. If you like it, put in your credit card and it'll finalize. But that capability is coming very quickly. So I think exploring every week, putting aside half an hour to play with ChatGPT or Gemini or whatever your preferred version is, and just push those technologies a little bit in the hopes that one of them sparks and you say, aha, I can use this at work. This would be a good feature.
Absolutely, yeah. I could contribute maybe that you could use ChatGPT to learn languages, like in conjunction with maybe a Duolingo or something like that. But if you are like me, need a lot of practice, which I'm very, I don't know, avoiding as much as possible when it comes to learning foreign languages. But you can use the audio interface of the ChatGPT app to have a very natural conversation where essentially at the beginning you prompt the model to act as your kind of learning buddy or maybe even a tutor. And you just say, I want to practice, in my case, Spanish, and then have a conversation with me. And it's a use case which to me unlocks, it's not replacing humans, but it is creating a situation where in this specific case, for me, there's a lot of stress involved when I'm practicing a foreign language, and there's much less stress when practicing with an AI. So can you think of maybe like once a person has become relatively familiar with ChatGPT and the new features that are being rolled out, what would be the next step for somebody who is not techie, as you said, but is feeling the AI divide?
Somebody would think through their life and say, where is there a highly repetitive task, for example, and can AI help me by replacing that? Would be one, and that might be at work or at home. Some people are comfortable, for example, saying, I'm going to let AI screen my emails and identify those which are important in some way. For most of us, our life is such a sort of cornucopia of different things that your home email is probably not a good candidate for scanning and summarizing by AI. But if you're at work and you have a work email address that is just customer feedback coming in to address complaints or compliments or questions, etc., it's entirely possible, quite straightforwardly, to set up a filtering mechanism, particularly if you're already on Microsoft and you have Copilot, or if you're on the Google ecosystem and you have Gemini. And I think experimenting with that is a fun way to understand the technology and also to see the possibilities that you might say, great, I'm going to go ahead and probably with a little bit of help, but possibly by yourself, implement something like that. But you do it at sort of individual level first, to see that you're comfortable with the output. That would be one. Analogous to your learning languages, which I think is an excellent example, by the way. I think it's a really fun way to leverage this conversational ability of ChatGPT. And I love the fact that in its latest iteration, you can interrupt it, you can change its direction. You don't have to wait for it to finish an answer and then interact. Three, very much more conversational. But Google has a fantastic product called Notebook LM. And this could be for any topic that you want to learn. It could be something highly complex with a lot of research material, websites, documents, etc. Or it could be something very straightforward that somebody has forwarded you a 100-page PDF and you don't really want to read through it without understanding. So in Notebook LM, you upload whatever the content is, or you point to the website or the YouTube talk, etc. And then you can engage with it however you choose. You can ask it to prepare a summary. You can ask it to prepare a Q&A. Most excitingly, though, is that you can ask it to create a podcast in which two people talk to each other in a very engaging way about the content. And so for somebody who wants to learn but is not really that engaged, it's a fantastic way to do that. Now, not only that, but you push a button and the podcast stops. And one of the hosts says, I think we have a question from the audience here. And you interject your question related to something they've said or the topic. They answer your question in live, real time, which I think is an extraordinary demonstration of AI capability, but also is addressing ways to learn for people who don't like to absorb information just by reading the 100-page PDF or doing it the old-fashioned way.
I'm so glad, Justin, that you brought up Notebook. I think it's definitely in that set of tools that should be in the second step after getting familiar with chatbots. From my personal experiences with Notebook, I would recommend people to try Notebook and use it, especially, you mentioned YouTube, especially with YouTube, because YouTube's full of content where to learn new skills, very practical skills very often. For example, I was helping a friend of mine, a tattoo artist, with, she wanted to get a bit of help to go from image to video, essentially images of her work to make that into clips for social media, etc. And there's a fair amount of tools out there. And for some of us, at least in my case, I have been using YouTube to learn about a lot of these tools. Obviously, I don't know every one of them. And just like everyone, like other people, I have to do my research. And that research often took me to YouTube, but it takes a lot of time and a bit of emotional control not to click from the thing that you're researching to all of the other cat videos that YouTube recommends or whatever it is. And so the pro tip I would have for our listeners is, if you're researching on YouTube, rather than listening and watching all of the videos for a specific topic, grab their URLs, drop them into Notebook LM, and then have maybe the podcast tell you a summary, but in which you can inject the questions that you actually have. So in my case, I was working with this friend, and I was able to get the system to generate a podcast specifically for, if you're a tattoo artist, this is what you can do with your designs. And I think that's one of those, you referred to them as an aha moment before. I think that's definitely one of them.
Yeah.
I would want now to move, because you've already mentioned using these tools at work at some point, once you're relatively comfortable with them. So I'd like to move also in the activity that you have with businesses. I know you've been offering and running AI workshops. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think that there's quite an interesting phenomenon going on at the moment. And surveys are obviously changing as quickly as the technology is changing. So you have to take a snapshot and assume that it's representative, but it just gives you an idea. But the idea, which I think has been repeated and in my experience is correct, is that fewer companies have worked out what they want to do as a company with AI than people who are wanting to experiment and leverage AI. And so you have this gap between what's the corporate policy and how should we use AI versus the individuals who are going and saying, aha, I can make my life quicker, faster, more efficient by using these tools. And so what I'm trying to help with is sort of closing that gap, and not closing that gap by coming at it like we might have in my earlier career, when if a new technology came in, it was imposed from the top down. There's a new version of Microsoft Excel and everybody in the entire company has to use exactly the same version. And so we're inevitably two versions behind what's going on, but that's what you're required to do. You will learn it and you will do this. We have a very top-down, very hierarchy. The liberating power of AI is that it's not. It's a bottom-up skill set. It's you looking at your workday and saying, gosh, if I could automate my email responses or summarize documents or prepare my PowerPoint presentations more quickly and more efficiently, that's going to make me better at my job. That's the sort of nature of the liberation that comes from this AI technology. So those two have to be married together. And so the workshops are an attempt to do that, to try and help everybody think through strategically for a particular type of business, what are the sorts of things that AI lends itself to that will make the business better, more efficient, versus things where it might introduce risk. So the poor guy in finance who thinks that he's going to get a great boost in productivity by uploading confidential corporate financial information into ChatGPT probably needs to be constrained a little bit. But the person who's writing customer service responses using ChatGPT probably doesn't and can leverage, and the company as well as the individual can benefit from that. So thinking through that sort of task matrix of risk versus benefit, thinking through ethical policies. Some AI chatbots already try to build in some sort of ethical limitations. Some, on the other hand, believe in entire freedom, and so you can get some quite unpleasant stuff floating around in there. So what should my corporation do to think about that? And thinking about, should we standardize on a particular system or should we have a number of different approaches? Because the larger the corporation, the more the historic inclination of these corporations is to pick one standard. Part of the AI revolution, and we're talking about the speed, is that from one week to the next, one model is faster, better, quicker, more efficient, etc. And so picking one in January of 2020. You have really no idea by the time that system comes online at the end of 2025 whether what you've picked is correct. So thinking about how you architect that. And so I think there's that workshop incorporates all of that. And then also, because there are still folks who are uncomfortable with the idea of prompting, that in their minds, ChatGPT is a sort of Google replacement. I ask it a question, I get an answer, and that's it. And the answer is either good or it's bad. But actually, it's an interaction. It's a conversation. And so taking a workshop where you take something with a bland, generic question and you get a bland, generic answer, and over the course of 40 minutes, thinking about how to prompt to get the best out of ChatGPT or the Google or whatever it is that you're using, and looking at the answer at the end and saying, gosh, it is better if I structure my prompt, if I position it in certain ways, if I make it clear what I want, if I say, write an article like the New York Times or in the style of Axios, I'm going to give very different answers. And so playing with those sorts of tweaks to help people understand it's not just a one-off, ask a question, get an answer.
That sounds very comprehensive, because you've talked about the risks and the guardrails or other measures that organizations can put in place, the benefits depending on the type of industry you're in, and then all the way down to how somebody uses prompts or goes through a conversation, how that's different from doing a web search. So yeah, it sounds very comprehensive. How much time do people invest to go through these workshops?
Generally, 3 hours is a sort of bare minimum where you can cover at a high level what I've just described to you, but do it in a hands-on way. I really hate the idea of talking for 3 hours, almost as much as somebody hates the idea of listening to 3 hours of conversation. So 3 hours of engaged workshop is really a sort of covers the sectors, and then a full day gives you really more opportunity to dive into some of the topics in more detail and have more calibration of the audience and fitting their specific circumstances and what the relevant content is.
Right. And I guess the various pieces that you were listing earlier also are like about somewhat of a menu, right? It's not that in 3 hours you necessarily do all of them. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
What was the most surprising transformation you've seen in the participant in one of the workshops?
I worked with a security business, which is basically run as an agency model. It's a guy who has contacts in the world of people who can spend time as security guards. They're not full-time employees. So he goes and gets the contracts and then places a security guard at specific location. And it's a two-man show. His wife runs the books and the business, and he does the front office, if you like, selling the contracts and then placing the security guards. And with a little bit of work from AI, he is putting out a newsletter, which makes it look as if it's a 30-man corporate operation. Topics in security. Should I have drones at my event? Things that are really engaging, really professionally done, and done by this two-man team who have a lot of other things going on because of the efficiency of AI that can create the content, format it and present it and distribute it in a very customer-friendly and efficient way. There's another very happy story of a person who here at San Francisco used to be a big radio personality working for one of the big stations and decided to go into the business of coaching, teaching people how to prepare for media interviews, teaching people how to do big public speeches, teaching people how to create a social media persona. And she will tell you that she doesn't start any of her engagements without first going in and having a conversation with ChatGPT about how to prepare. I'm going to talk to the executive of a corporation that does such and such, and he is interested in creating a social media personality. What are the ways that I might engage with him? Just for some, you know, extra ideas, some creativity, some generation, and it becomes a habit. So I think those are ways in which small businesses in those cases can appear much more responsive and effective as marketers. And there's other applications in that sort of small and medium-term business, which can also be quite, again, the aha moment that we're looking for.
Wow. Yeah, those are great examples. And so as we're about to wrap up, I usually ask for a book, maybe a tool or a habit that has made the most impact on you in the last 12 months and why.
So Mustafa Suleiman, who's now head of AI at Microsoft, but before was one of the early pioneers, has written a book called The Coming Wave, which is a sort of analysis of the bigger picture that I don't write about in the newsletter. I don't generally talk about in my seminars. But I think it's important to understand, because there are a few books coming out now on the topic, but it's important to get a grasp for what this means for society, because we're not talking about transformation for our grandchildren. We're talking about transformation in our lifetime. I have more gray hair than you. My horizon, by definition, is a bit shorter. I'm seeing the transformation happen now. It's not something that I'm thinking about. There is a negative side to that, which is job losses. But there's also a very positive side, which is job creation, job reinvention, job satisfaction increase, etc. And it's starting to happen now. And because of human nature, it's not happening as quickly as the technology could allow it. But everybody should have some idea, as well as some self-reflection, about am I exposed to this wave, and how could I benefit from it? And my hope is that with a little bit of thought and creativity, most folk can find a way to come out on the positive side of that. But I do know that disengaging or waiting or doing nothing is not the right answer. So the two are together. One is perhaps that book, The Coming Wave by Mustafa Silverman. And the other is the habit of playing with AI, experimenting, whether it's through my newsletter or just web scanning or anything else, finding different ways to understand the power of the technology, and then hopefully think about how it might impact you in your life at work or at home or at play is not so bad either.
All right. We'll make sure to link both the book and, of course, your newsletter in the description. And the final question is, is there something that you would expect to remain constant 10 years from now, and why?
Human creativity will be an essential component of this. I think the AIs are going to get smarter, faster. I think more and more rote stuff will be done by AI agents rather than by humans. I think a lot of the material is going to be written by AI, but at the end of it, the stuff that's really going to matter is the stuff that isn't programmable, that just resides in the human brain and the human instinct and the human creative spirit. So to me, that's the constant. It's just a question of how it's engineered to maximize the benefit to the human rather than to the AI system.
Brilliant. That's great. Thank you very much, Justin.
Thank you, Alex. Great pleasure.
Justin gave us a lot to think about today. From the growing AI divide to practical ways we can bridge it, he's adamant that AI isn't just for tech experts. It's for everyone. Staying engaged and experimenting with artificial intelligence is key to staying relevant. His insights challenge us to ask ourselves, how can we make AI not just a tool for ourselves, but a force for empowering those around us, our teams, communities, and organizations? If you're ready to dive deeper into practical AI tools or want to bring actionable strategies to your workplace, check out Justin's newsletter. The link is in the description. It's a trusted hands-on guide for non-technical users, and his workshops are an excellent resource for organizations looking to break down barriers to AI adoption and craft a smarter, more inclusive roadmap for the future. As always, we have more exciting topics and guest appearances lined up, so stay tuned for more tales of innovation that inspire, challenge, and transform. Until next time, peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Innovation Tales. Get inspired, connect with other practitioners, and approach the digital revolution with confidence. Visit innovation-tales.com for more episodes. See you next time.